Hello and welcome to Undivided. I'm Brandi Cruz. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I have to get right to it today because I'm pissed off today. I have tried to be diplomatic, I think. I like to believe I've tried to be diplomatic about what's happening in Olympia this legislative session. I like to think that I have used facts and reason and common sense in trying to make an argument that lawmakers need to prioritize public safety now more than ever. And I like to think that I have celebrated both Democrats and Republicans who have been focused on that issue. I celebrated two bipartisan bills introduced at the beginning of the session that would have made meaningful improvements to our state's broken police pursuit policy. And I had high hopes for those two bills. Instead, what's happened? They've been watered down. You have a segment of the Democratic Party in Olympia that simply refuses to acknowledge that the bill they passed in 2021 that dramatically limits the instances where police can pursue even dangerous suspects, they refuse to admit that it has had a direct impact on public safety across our state, that it's killing people, that it's leading to the victimization of people. They refuse to admit it because they're cowards. And I've come to the conclusion today that lawmakers who continue to support that failed policy, lawmakers who continue to advocate against changing it, they genuinely do not care if people die, as long as it means they don't have to admit that they were wrong, as long as it means that they can continue to pander to the progressive wing of their party, which they think will help them get reelected. What a sad place that is to be as a politician. And why do I bring this up today? Why am I pissed off about this today? Well, I'm pissed off because two kids are dead. A six-year-old and an eight-year-old.
A deadly crash on I-82, two children killed, and authorities suspect the driver involved was under the influence. That tragic story leads our newscast tonight. I'm Alyssa Warner. KAPKV's Emily Goodell tells us the troopers believe the suspect was driving under the influence and had been involved in a police chase just about an hour before the crash.
This happened in Sunnyside, Washington, and it is the natural result of our state's failed police pursuit law, a law that makes it nearly impossible for police to pursue a suspect, even if they believe that that suspect could go on to kill someone. In Sunnyside, Washington, a 20-year-old man from Springfield, Missouri, named Keith Goings, was clocked on Interstate 90 going 111 miles an hour. 111 miles an hour. Now, state patrol troopers realized that they could not pursue him. They could not pursue him because under the law, as it's currently structured, speeding is not a justification for a pursuit. What happened next was absolutely inevitable. About an hour later, on Interstate 82 near Sunnyside, Goings slammed his Ford Mustang into a Nissan Altima, killing two children who were inside, 6 years old and 8 years old. 6 years old and 8 years old. And I have seen no willingness from the people who continue to advocate for this police pursuit policy to even in the light of these deaths, make a turn, change direction, acknowledge that, you know what, there is more evidence that this police pursuit policy is hurting people than it is that it's saving lives. And in fact, I would point to your own data. For Democrats who have continued, remember what we were told? Senator Monica Dingra, chair of the Law and Justice Committee, wouldn't give the solid bipartisan police pursuit fix a hearing. Why? Because she said that you were being too emotional.
I think this policy has become so politicized that people are no longer looking at data or best practices. They're having an emotional reaction to it.
What else did she say? She said they didn't have any data.
I have not seen any data that correlates the legislation we passed with increase in time in crime.
And to the contrary, she said that the state had data showing that the 2021 police pursuit law was actually saving innocent lives.
The data that I have seen come in says that the deaths of bystanders has dramatically gone down. And so our streets are safer for innocent individuals who are just going about their day. And that's the only data I'm aware of. So I'll say the problem that we were trying to solve appears to that appears to have happened. We're seeing fewer people dying just because they were at the wrong place at the wrong time.
But might I remind you that the very data she's alluding to there has not only been debunked by an expert in law enforcement statistical analysis, but it has changed over time. And it now actually shows the exact opposite of what she's claiming. This is a study that was done by a retired UW professor. And back when it was first posted at the end of January, it claimed that there had been a 73% reduction. A 73% reduction in people killed as a result of an active vehicular pursuit. And here's what it said. We're going to look at these side by side. So first, let me explain the initial iteration of this that was posted. It claimed that there had been five innocent bystanders killed in police pursuits in the year and a half before the new legislation went into effect. Five. It said that there had been three passengers in a vehicle driven by a suspect that had been killed in that year and a half. And there had also been three suspects killed during a police pursuit as a result of a police pursuit. And then it claimed in the year and a half after that law went into effect, there was an impressive 73% reduction in the loss of life, including a reduction in the number of innocent bystanders killed. That number going from 5 to 3. But might I remind you that in early February, February 4th, that study was taken down from the website that was hosting it. And it disappeared for about a 24-hour period of time before it was put back up. And when it was put back up, the numbers told a very different story. In fact, the numbers they reposted after this study came under intense scrutiny for whether it was actually valid or factual, the new numbers they posted when the study came back online, take a look. They now said there was a 67% reduction. And in fact, fewer people had been killed by police pursuits in the year and a half before the law went into effect than they initially thought. Now they were saying it was not 11, but 9. And now they said that it wasn't 5 innocent bystanders that were killed, but rather it was 2. And post-reform, the new data showed that the number of innocent bystanders killed in the year and a half since the law went into effect was 3. So when Manka Dhingra says this,
"The data that I have seen come in says that the deaths of bystanders has dramatically gone down. And so our streets are safer for innocent individuals who are just going about their day. And that's the only data I'm aware of. So I'll say the problem that we were trying to solve appears to, that appears to have happened. We're seeing fewer people dying just because they were at the wrong place at the wrong time."
The sole report that she has been using to justify that position, to justify statements like that, says the contrary. It actually says that now more innocent bystanders have been killed in the year and a half since that police pursuit went into law than in the year and a half prior. Now, don't get me wrong. I think this entire report is absolute bullshit. And when you're talking about the differences in a number like 9, which don't get me wrong, anybody killed is a tragedy. But when you're talking about small discrepancies, 2 killed this year and a half, 3 killed this year and a half, and you're trying to make that somehow statistically relevant, I find it incredibly disingenuous. But if we're playing by your rules and we're to believe that this report is the holy grail of information that you're basing your legislative decisions off of, then Senator Dhingra, it looks like more innocent bystanders were actually killed after you passed the failed police pursuit policy. So how do you account for that? Well, you account for that because these numbers aren't statistically significant, nor should they be used to craft policy that has to do with public safety. If we're going to use the study that you've been using to prop up your position on this, the only lives you've successfully saved are the lives of criminals and their accomplices. You haven't saved any innocent lives. You have no facts or justification for a comment like this.
"Well, streets are safer for innocent individuals who are just going about their day. And that's the only data I'm aware of. So I'll say the problem that we were trying to solve appears to, that appears to have happened. We're seeing fewer people dying just because they were at the wrong place at the wrong time."
No, your policy has cost innocent lives. Some we know about, like a 6-year-old and an 8-year-old. And untold numbers of people who we don't know about, who have been victimized by suspects who have successfully fled from law enforcement because of your efforts at police reform. Because you looked at a handful of people who had been killed by police pursuits, killed in police pursuits. You look at that and you see a failure of the police rather than a failure of the people who made the decision to drive off. That's your problem. And you're holding the rest of us hostage with your failed ideas, your failed ideology, and you have the absolute nerve to tell us that we're upset by this because we're being too emotional.
I think this policy has become so politicized that people are no longer looking at data or best practices. They're having an emotional reaction to it.
Senator Dinger, here's what I want you to do. You go to the parents of that 6-year-old and that 8-year-old. You go to the family of that 6-year-old and that 8-year-old. And you tell them that they're being too emotional. And you let us know how that goes. Okay, on this subject of public safety, I had a really nice conversation this morning with a Washington mayor who I just think is wonderful because I think she's just so common sense, does not like performative politics, Kent Mayor Dana Ralph. And I was going to play the entirety of that interview today, but I mentioned to you guys that I'm working on a series that's going to air later this month about the truth tellers in our communities, people who have spoken up, regardless of the cost to them, people who have spoken out. At times when it has been difficult. And, you know, in our conversation, I really realized that Mayor Ralph is one of them. And so I want to save the bulk of that interview to air as part of that series and to highlight some of the things that she has been an advocate for and against. But we did talk about the pursuit law and about where things are in Olympia. And so I wanted to play just a part of that conversation for you. I've had a lot of frustration around the pursuit law. What is your position on where that law should be at the end of the session?
So I am really supportive of Rep. Rule's proposal. I think that she did the right thing. I'm frustrated. I feel like we've made a tiny bit of progress. They've added DV in domestic violence into that pursuit. But things like stolen vehicles, without that, I don't think we've made a ton of progress. I mean, we know that the bad guys are stealing cars and using them to drive through businesses, commit other crimes. The reality is we can't continue at this pace of nearly 50,000 cars stolen a year in the state.
Yeah, and just to give folks a little bit of context for the Alicia Rule bill, which was one of the bipartisan bills that came through the House, and she's a Democrat. She had Republican support on that bill, and then there was a substitute bill that watered it down a bit. Mm-hmm. So basically, they're just under the current consideration, there are, I think, 6 types of crimes that officers could pursue under if it passes. So I think it's any type of violent crime, domestic violent, violence, assault, escape from justice. Oh, now I'm going to
DUI. Blank on the
DUI. A vehicular assault is one, and then I'm missing one, but it doesn't include anything for stolen vehicles. There has been an assertion from some Democrats, you know, Senator Monica Dingra, we've been just driving the issue home with her because she's sort of like, show me the data that suggests that the current pursuit law is making crime worse. And in my mind, I'm like, well, I don't know how that data can exist because then I would have to tie someone who drove off and know everything that they went on to do. And that's hard. I would argue it's almost impossible. So if you were chatting with someone like Senator Dingra or other Democrats who support the fix from 2021 and don't want to change, how could you articulate to them how that has contributed to the crime crisis?
I mean, I think we do have some proof in that every jurisdiction has the 911 tape of the person calling back. We've had it happen in Kent. Tell your officers to stop pursuing me. They're not allowed to. That in and of itself, to me, feels like that should be the only thing we need to say.
It's wild.
It's crazy.
It's wild.
Just we know what we're seeing, right? Since July of 21, the number of stolen vehicles has gone up. The number of crimes being committed with stolen vehicles has gone up. So we're seeing, like I said, we're seeing people steal a car. They use it. They drive through. It just happened in Edmonds or Linwood this week. They use that stolen vehicle to drive through a business. They try and steal things. They get back in the car. And once they're back in the car, they're then safe, essentially. And the problem is, I've heard a lot of conversation about, well, you can find them later. Well, if you're in a stolen vehicle and I don't know who you are, I don't know how to find you later, right?
Right.
It doesn't make any sense to me. And we know that all of these crimes are going up, and it's they're rising at a much faster rate in the state of Washington than they are anyplace else.
Yeah, and there was just that horrible case. I don't know if you heard about it. We talked about it early on the podcast. In Sunnyside, there was a guy going 110 miles an hour. Yeah. They couldn't pursue him because that's not allowed under the law. He went and killed two kids in a car crash. I mean, that's horrifying.
It's replaying itself over and over in every jurisdiction. We had a stolen vehicle with one of our neighboring cities that they knew was stolen. We're sitting there waiting on it. The guys got back in the car. They couldn't pursue. Ended up crashing that car, carjacking two more cars before they crashed. That's two carjackings that could have been prevented had they been able to stop that stolen vehicle in the beginning.
Yeah, I thought it was a no-brainer heading into the legislative session that they would fix this thing in a meaningful way. And now, like, as the weeks go by, I'm more and more depressed about it. I mean, something is better than nothing.
That's the position that we're taking. We're going to continue to, as it works through the process, I will continue to testify. Our chief will continue to testify. And we'll take whatever changes we can get, and we'll keep working on it.
Yeah. In the South King County, mayors and chiefs have been very outspoken. Is there an element of feeling like you're just sort of always living in Seattle shadow on these issues? Like your voice just down there collectively does not matter as much.
I think that's why you've seen us come together as a South County to elevate that voice, because that's sort of been the way that South County is treated for decades. So making sure that folks understand, Mayor Backus said this in a meeting the other day, that we're sort of the canary in the coal mine, right? When things happen in South County, it's just a matter of time before you start seeing them in other places. So we were the first ones in 21 to be really vocal about a couple of the reforms. Always preface that with, I 100% believe that there were reforms necessary in policing. Many of them we had embraced already. That is not saying that, but it's these kinds of very, very pursuits. Pursuits are a part of catching bad guys. We need to be clear about what's making a difference. There's a traffic stop bill. That traffic stop bill does not make any sense.
You're referring to the one that would disallow officers from pulling someone over for a non-moving violation.
Yes.
For like a expired tab or an equipment violation.
Yep.
For you, why does that not make sense?
Traffic stops are one of the ways that a lot of times we find guns, drugs, people with warrants. We saw something really terrible happen in Tennessee, so we should just stop this other thing. They're not related. That's a human thing. How do we deal with the actions of those people involved and take that on, as opposed to just saying, oh, it's the traffic stop. It's not the traffic stop. And we know that as we've taken these sort of traffic type rules away, we're seeing more accidents. We're seeing more fatal accidents. Fewer people are paying attention while they're driving, and that's only creating a more dangerous society.
That's a little bit of my conversation with Kent Mayor Dana Ralph. Again, we're going to highlight her and other truth tellers in our community coming up later this month. And I also, by the way, I was sure you guys were going to ask me about this. I did also ask her about the Kent Chamber of Commerce event that I opted not to be the keynote speaker at after being peppered with questions about my politics, and she and I had a really nice conversation with that, so that'll be a part of that segment as well. Okay, one brief housekeeping thing I want to talk about. Tonight at Town Hall Seattle at 7:30 p.m., I'm going to be participating in a panel about whether our democracy can be improved by something called a citizens assembly. We discussed it on the show a couple weeks ago with my friend Ansel Hurst. And it's essentially this idea that when you have these highly, highly controversial issues that both political parties just have, their ingrained opinions on, there are some places in the world that use something called a citizen assembly, where they get citizens chosen at random together to try to sort through some of these issues and come up with possible policies. Now, I am not sold on this idea. It's why I look forward to participating in this panel discussion and talking it through about whether there is a place for this in American society, in a city like Seattle, in a state like Washington. So if you go to the Town Hall Seattle website, because if you're listening to this episode right after it airs, you'll have some time to scoop up some tickets. I think they're like anywhere from $5 to $20. And you can come, make sure you say hi if you're there, come and watch this conversation about whether getting citizens more involved in the process would be a good thing or a bad thing. I had a nice check-in with Dr. Ryan Coogan at Eastside Weight Loss Clinic this morning. Just checking in with him on how things are going. I got a little weigh-in to see where I'm at, which is always nice. You want to make sure you're keeping track of where you're at. I'm pretty close to my goal weight, which is just my pre-pandemic weight. You know, I was never doing the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan to get like uber skinnier than I'd ever been. I just wanted to get back to where I was and be able to maintain it. And so I'm just a few pounds away. So I'm excited to celebrate that sort of milestone when I get back to my pre-pandemic weight. But I will say I've been hearing from a ton of you who, you know, have heard me talk about the program and decided to join. I got an email from a husband-wife duo that have been on the program for a couple weeks, and they've been losing weight. And we're just kind of commiserating back and forth. Because, I mean, it's not a magic program. You know, it's not like you go in there and poof, you're going to take some magic pill and lose all this weight. It's hard work. You have to eat healthier. It's just, and everyone knows how you lose weight, right? You eat better. It's not a secret. But I think having someone who can hold your hand through the process, give you a little bit of structure, give you a little bit of accountability is sometimes just what you need. I mean, if all of us knew and could commit to a diet because we knew it would make us like lose weight, then all of us would be skinny, but it's harder than that. And so that's really the benefit of the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan for me. And when I started in November to where I am today is having someone who I am accountable to. In fact, I hadn't entered my weight in the app for a little while. I'd skipped a few days. And Megan from the office called, she's like, just checking in to make sure everything's okay. Cause I noticed that you haven't been entering things into the app. And I was like, oh, I'm caught, guilty as charged. So I got to make sure I get my weight in there tomorrow. But if you'd like to join myself and other undivided listeners who have taken the plunge to try to get back on track before the summer, schedule a free consultation with Dr. Coogan at eastsideweightlossclinic.com. That's eastsideweightlossclinic.com. Dr. Ryan Coogan, DC, results may vary. As the 2024 campaign rumors swirl and people start to enter the race, and it's just going to be like dominoes at this point, of course, there's a lot of focus on Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, and there's more everything he does, and I guess rightfully so, you know, when he's put himself in the spotlight like that, everything he does is under this intense scrutiny, a bunch of stories, and we're going to get to Florida Report in a moment, but we talk about Ron DeSantis on Florida Report a lot. And I support a lot of things that Ron DeSantis does and says, but occasionally there are some things where I'm like, what are you doing? That is not in keeping with who you say you are politically speaking. And so this week on Florida Report, Miranda has a few stories for us that fit in the not a fan of category.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Joining us is our Florida-based Ron DeSantis correspondent, which I feel like is kind of what you are at this point.
Yeah, and we're just getting started. If he decides to run for the president, we're gonna be Ron DeSantis out for sure. And
you're gonna have to get an interview with him. You know that, right?
So I've already been working on that for you.
you didn't tell me this. Okay, I'm excited. It'll be a special episode of Florida Report. Although I will say, you know, with all this talk of him running for the presidency, it just puts this real glaring spotlight on Florida. And of course, the media is going to look for all these stories that make him look bad. And they found a couple. I will say I'm not a big fan of either of these things. So you sent me one story about the legislative session in Florida. And this one, I got to be honest, pisses me off quite a bit. So there is a bill that a Republican state lawmaker in Florida introduced that would require bloggers who write about politics to register with the state?
Yeah, so this bill is titled Information Dissemination, and it would require bloggers to not only register with the state if they write about elected officials, but it would also require them to disclose the people who might be paying for them to write about these elected officials. And it defines elected state officials as the governor, the lieutenant governor, a cabinet officer, or any member of the legislature. And there's also penalties. So failing to register would result in a fine of $25 a day, and the penalty would be capped at $2,500 per posting. So it comes down to not only registering, you know, being registered as an actual blogger, but if they see a post up, that's when they start finding you if you're not a registered blogger.
Yeah. So I think that the idea here is that you have, you know, and we're dealing with that in our state. I just wrote an article about it. You have, in absence of sort of a robust traditional media climate, you have a lot of independent media outlets like this one popping up to fill the gap. And I understand the desire to know how they're funded. I mean, I've been pretty clear, I think, about our funding source. The majority of it comes from people who pay $5 a month to get the Wednesday episode for free. Well, not for free, for $5 a month. And then we also have sponsors that we talk about on the show. But for instance, one of our sponsors, I'm an ambassador for Future 42, which is a politically inclined organization. But, you know, we're very transparent about it. But I also don't think it's the government's job to force us to be transparent about it. I'll read quick, Miranda, if you don't mind, from the bill.
Yeah.
It says, if a blogger posts to a blog about an elected state officer and receives or will receive compensation for that post, the blogger must register with the appropriate office as identified in blah, 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 within 5 days after the first post by the blogger, which mentions an elected state officer. It goes on to say, upon registering with the appropriate office, a blogger must file monthly reports on the 10th day following the end of each calendar month from the time the blog post is added to the blog. So, I mean, this is very Orwellian to me, because I would also point to, first of all, every media entity makes money somehow. Whether it's through advertising, if you look at the Seattle Times, they partner with a lot of outside entities to fund their reporting on homelessness and mental health, and they just disclose it at the top of the articles. So this, to me, is way beyond overreach.
Yeah, I agree. It's absolutely overreaching. And I don't know, I couldn't find anything that's like, I guess like the reason behind bringing something to the table, because I was like, oh, maybe this is their way overreaching, you know, attempt at fighting fake news or getting, you know, behind certain types of like, but then it's also like, no, because you can't fight fake news anyways. But also this just seems like, can you deny a blogger if they want to register and then they can't write? Like there's some First Amendment issues clearly involved.
Well, yeah, I don't think it's constitutional. And then even if you have someone, a blogger who's getting funding from someone to write, that doesn't mean automatically that their reporting is any more or less biased than the mainstream media. So yeah. I don't understand what the goal is. It's complete overreach. I'm really disappointed that it's a Republican-backed bill, because that's not what they're supposed to be about. And this next story actually kind of is similar in nature, where I look at it as sort of the antithesis of limited government or government overreach. And so, you know, there's been this whole battle brewing between Disney and Ron DeSantis, and Disney essentially has this improvement district that it controls. It almost lets it be its own government. And what's happened is DeSantis has taken that over, and he's supposed to appoint this board of what, 5 members to oversee it. I guess does this all just sort of stem from his anger at Disney as like a woke organization?
I do think that that's kind of, that seems to be where kind of things started with the whole, you know, Ron and what he wanted to do with the public school system, and then getting some kind of like internal pressure at Disney, they started to kind of like, you know, cater to that kind of like rhetoric too. And, you know, you can go to Disney and get like gender neutral greetings and all this stuff, which is just totally fine. It's all fine. I don't understand why this has to cause a complete government chaos war between, you know, an elected official and a entertainment company. But not for nothing, Disney is a very big company. They're the state's largest private employer. And from what I understand, there was also a previous thing in act that if this didn't happen, the debt of the taxes from that land would end up going to the taxpayers of the counties that share the land that Disney sits on. So, you know, there's some positive of it, but there's also, it's still all stuff that could have been handled maybe a little bit less of DeSantis' involvement, because the people that he's appointing seem to be very of one-minded type people.
Right. I mean, he's going to appoint people who think like him for the most part. I don't think that's a surprise. That's every politician is going to appoint people who they like. But to me, I do agree with the sentiment that there are some good legitimate arguments for Florida, the government taking over this particular space. To me, the issue is the genesis of it. And, you know, Disney spoke out against the Parental Rights and Education Act, which the media dubbed the Don't Say Gay Bill. And that started, I think, a lot of the anger between DeSantis and Disney. And let me just play really quick. When DeSantis signed this new law where they took over this improvement district, let me just play a little clip.
We also have people that very much want to see Disney be what Walt envisioned, which is what we all wanted to do. I mean, we're, you know, honestly, in spite of all the stuff that's happened in the last couple of years, you know, I've always been very proud of our parks. I've been proud of so many people that have been able to come to Florida over the years. I mean, it's almost like a rite of passage for people to be able to come down here. And I think a lot of families have had really great experiences for many times, you know, but when you lose your way, you know, you gotta have people that are gonna tell you the truth. And so we hope that they can get back on. But I think all these board members very much would like to see the type of entertainment that all families can appreciate. I'm gonna put my John Hancock on this piece of legislation. That'll make it official. And so just look at your watch and you'll know at what time the corporate kingdom finally came to an end.
And so to me, and even Mike Pence said, this is a quote from Mike Pence, and Mike Pence is probably going to run in 2024. And so, you know, take it at a grain of salt that he's saying this about a to-be political opponent. But he said that what the governor has done with Disney is, quote, beyond the scope of what I, as a conservative, limited government Republican, would be prepared to do. And I think that's very fair. I think that some of what Ron DeSantis has done in almost seeking retribution against people who don't agree with his politics goes a little bit too far.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. And also, you know, if he plans to run for president, like, we love Disney. America, like, we love Disney. So, like, don't go after it too hard, because that might hit him a little bit, you know, coming around just in like a common sense type of a thing.
Yeah, but also Disney, I don't disagree that Disney's gone woke. I mean, I really don't. I, you know, the whole Disney Plus thing where they were like pushing a bunch of shows, like I think it was Disney Plus that had a show about kid drag shows, and I'm like, why do we need that? And so I don't disagree with him, but I think you can fight that culture war without exerting your power in this way as a governor.
It's true. And you can let the, you know, also it's a private company, and people, citizens choose to go there or not go there. So like, it's kind of just, it's not a place for government to like kind of interfere in that sense.
Yeah. And I'd look at it the same way if, and that's, I think what we always have to do is, how would we feel if it was different political parties? And if Governor Jay Inslee, you know, wanted to exert more control over a corporation because he didn't like the political views they were espousing, there's a lot of people who would have an absolute justified fit over that. So it's about, I think, just, you know, actions before affiliation, moral consistency, and looking at this through that lens. Let's end with a fun one, because we always talk about Florida man stories, because why would we not? There's so many good ones. And I think Netflix has realized that there is a lot of potential there for good content.
Yeah, there is a lot of potential there for good content. I mean, we're able to come up with something pretty often, but there's a new series coming out in April called Florida Man. And it's, you know, about a Florida native who had moved away and came back to the state. And he goes through all your classic Florida Man stuff. And they're saying that it'll put any Florida Man meme or article to shame, what he's going to go through. So we can all watch that together and get a little more familiar with who Florida Man is.
I look forward to your review of this Netflix show.
Yes.
All right, Miranda. Well, anything else going on? Are you doing okay down there?
Yeah, it's beautiful. I'm looking outside. There's palm trees gently swaying in the wind.
Okay.
It's all blue skies.
I regret that I asked. That has been this week's episode of Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Okay, we'll end with some of your comments. I will say, I posted on Facebook the other day that I was stressed out just because I have a lot going on right now, and we're trying to expand the show, and I've got a vacation coming up, and just not enough time in the day. And I told you guys to send me pictures of your animals, your pets, and oh my God, you guys posted like 5,000 pictures of your dogs and cats and miniature horses and birds and bunnies and all measure of animal. And I looked at I think all of them. I've been scrolling through it. So if you want a good feed to just turn your day around, go to my Facebook page because you guys did not disappoint. I want to read some comments of yours on this story about the two kids that were killed when troopers couldn't stop a high-speed driver. He was drunk. He ended up crashing into the vehicle that they were in. Paul said, more blood on the legislature and governor's hands just to show how woke they are. Alora said, the footage from the Yakima scanner page was just heartbreaking. Yeah, and I just don't know if I want to relive some of that on here. It's so sad. Jerry said, the people who we voted in have no clue of what really is reality. Nothing but lining their pockets from groups that are in the clueless clubhouse. Unfortunately, more lives are at risk. Margaret said, it's gotten to a point of very little agreement between liberals and conservatives. And, you know, there are some more mundane things that they agree on that don't get as much attention. And I guess that's because when there's disagreement and conflict and, you know, trying to sort through the process, that's what really gets the coverage. And I think some of that is rightfully so. But I will agree with the sentiment that the parties seem to be moving further and further to the edges. And it just leaves us, some of us in the middle, like, what the hell is going on? Christine said, I wish lawmakers had to take an oath like the police to protect and serve. That's true. David said, the family needs to sue Washington State. I'm not going to lie. I mean, I hate when lawmakers are on have to bear the brunt of stupidity of the government, but I think the family should sue Washington State. Tracy said, this is about as wrong as it gets. I totally agree. Susan said, insanity, absolute insanity. Let's see. Lori said, criminals rank above innocent kids in this state. I'm disgusted and leaving soon. And I can't, you know, more and more as time goes by, I just can't disagree with that sentiment, that there seems to be this real prioritization of criminals over law-abiding citizens. Like, we're just trying to work hard, raise families, live our lives, mind our own business. And at every turn, they're making it more difficult for us and easier for people who don't follow the rules. And that is a really frustrating place to be. All right. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. Thank you for letting me vent my frustration at the top of the show. If you have not become an Undivided subscriber already, consider doing so. It's just $5 a month. You can sign up either on Patreon, patreon.com/undivided, or by becoming a contributor on my locals community, brandycruz.locals.com. I'll see you guys on Monday.